Live from the University of Connecticut in Storrs, this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're broadcasting from the student union on the campus, and we're sitting down with the president of UConn, Susan Herbst. She joins us periodically on our program, and given the importance and reach of the flagship university in the state, there is an awful lot to talk about. Now, usually she comes into our studio in Hartford, but we are on her turf today, and we're giving a group of students and faculty and others who've joined us here a chance to ask questions. So if you're nearby listening to our signal at 99.5 right here in Storrs, come on over and take part in today's conversation. We will get to some questions from students, including some journalism students who are in the audience today in just a moment. But I want to welcome back to our show Susan Herbst. Thank you very much for inviting us here, President, and thanks for being back on Where We Live.
Yeah, thanks, John, for coming to campus.
So what's new this year, first of all?
Oh, my gosh, there's so much new, but I think the most important thing that we're doing is hiring more faculty. You know, we're hiring hundreds of faculty each year to try to boost the innovation, the quality of education here at the university. One of the students' complaints that, you know, hit me as soon as I landed here at UConn was that they didn't get the classes, they couldn't get the classes they needed when they needed them. And that does prevent people from graduating on time, from moving around different majors if the availability isn't there. A lot of the classes too large, in particular intro to biology. Some of the intro science classes were just too big. And while at a big university, you're always going to have some lecture classes, you do want to have a mix of big and small classes and the ability of the professor to touch the students. So I have to say that was one of the biggest drivers. Another driver is research performance. The university needs to accelerate, you know, the number and importance of federal grants that we get. To do that, we need to bring more brain power to the university. And, of course, in the social sciences and the humanities and the professional schools, we also create new knowledge and art. And if we're going to do that and act like the great research university that we are, we need more people.
There are about four big stories right now that UConn is part of, and we'll go through some of those in this first segment. And obviously the students may have questions about some of those things and many other things about life on campus that I don't know very much about. But let's get started with one of these. And you along with the rest of us read just a few days ago in the Hartford Current the story that started like this, and this is from John Lender, who covers state government. Two dozen of the University of Connecticut's top administrators got raises, ranging from $10,000 to $22,500, effective August 9th, as life on the Big Storrs campus remains insulated from economic conditions that have left the state struggling to balance its budget. So before I get into some of the particulars about that, just give me your reaction to that lead line. What does that say to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was unfair editorializing. The the data are right, and all of our salaries are public. So, you know, people are able to go and see any salary at the university at any time. So it's fair to publish salaries. We have no problem with that. The next day, or the day after, did a great editorial on why the salaries at UConn for administrators need to be competitive. And we work in a national labor market. We recruit, say, a dean of business, a dean of fine arts, a vice president. We're competing with publics and privates all over the nation. So our salaries have to be competitive. Everybody I hire is within the range. You know, we have a study of what these different positions, deans, vice presidents make around the country, and I stay within that range to make sure that our salaries are normative. But I will tell you that I will hire only great people at the University of Connecticut. It goes for faculty and it goes for administrators. And, you know, having been around the country, been at so many universities, I have seen mediocre deans, vice presidents run institutions into the ground. And I think our students deserve great education. They deserve great professors who are paid properly. And also, these are hard jobs, being a dean and a VP. I want the best people here. And like I said, we are competing with publics and privates to get the best possible leaders. So we will do that. We will do it responsibly, but, you know, nothing to apologize for. And I'm really glad that the current editorial staff sees that very clearly.
But just so that people understand this competitive market that you're talking about, when, as they have printed here, and it's easily accessible because this is all public information, the number of people who make $200,000, $250,000 plus, I think one question that many people would ask is, yes, we need to pay the top people in the top jobs the top money to get the very best, because UConn should be the best. But do we need as many vice provosts as we have? Do we need as many people as part of this upper tier administration making so much money, when indeed, as John Peace points out, the state is struggling in a lot of other ways. There's a lot of other ways in which we're trying to pinch pennies.
Yes, absolutely. We need those people. And if you'd go through the list of people, you'd see why we need them. We do need a dean of engineering. We need a dean of fine arts. We need a vice president for economic development. Those are critical positions. If you look at any other great research university, Penn State, Michigan, et cetera, I'd say we have a much thinner administration than most of the places that are our aspirant peers. So, you know, I'm very comfortable with what we've done. I have eliminated some top positions that I thought were unnecessary, and I did that through some restructuring last year. That kind of thing doesn't get covered when we eliminate positions or we gain efficiencies, which is too bad. But I understand the need of the news media to... this is a pretty negative part of the country, and I think, you know, you probably lived in different parts of the country, or maybe not. Maybe you.
I grew up in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has a slightly more positive attitude toward the rest of the world than the Northeast does.
I mean, I've lived around the country, and this is, you know, it's a kind of a negative mood state here sometimes, looking for kind of the worst things that the university reported, things that they know will make people upset. And I mean, I understand that. I'm from up here, but. It's too bad because I think that a lot of people, the state really does own the University of Connecticut. This is a wide open campus. We have so many events, putting aside sports, you know, arts, culture, our beautiful Benton Museum that we're looking out at. I wish people would take more advantage of the great things we have and enjoy being associated with the university and owning it. It's their place. So I wish that, you know, the media could focus on that more, but I understand they have to sell papers.
If it's about selling papers, I mean, look, they kind of got out of that business a long time ago. It's really about accountability in a lot of ways. It's accountability in a lot of ways, and I think one of the things that maybe we can, to get out of the conversation, we've talked about this before, but the conversation about how the media might say, you're spending too much on top salaries and you might defend it. Let's just talk about the place of money in schools today, in universities today. They cost a lot of money to run. Mm-hmm. It seems as though, and we're going to talk more about, you know, building a new athletics facility for students, $100 million, things like that. There seems to be a type of an arms race between schools at which top administrators get paid top dollar. Top football coaches get paid top dollar. You got to get new dorms all the time, new facilities all the time. Susan Harris, where does it end? I mean, do we have to keep pumping this kind of money into these different things when, you know, a lot of people look at college and say, what we really need to do is get as many professors in here as possible and just teach people?
I don't, you know, there is absolutely an arms race that goes on at the top. We're not at the top. and so I'd like you to, all this stuff is relative. I'd like you to compare the number of administrators we have, the spending we have on administrative salaries to other institutions like ours and privates. And I think you'll find that we're extraordinarily responsible, accountable. I have not hired a variety of people because they were too expensive.
But just to take you out of like what UConn's doing, sure. Let's just talk at the higher level about, I mean, do university presidents ever get together and say, look, we this can't keep going on. We can't keep having this arms race to build the next newest campus in order to attract more students. I mean, does it end at a certain point at which we're spending too much money on too lavish facilities, on too high salaries for football coaches? You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think you're painting with too broad a brush here. So if you could get a little bit more specific on athletics, you know, absolutely. Yeah. For us, athletic spending, we're certainly not anywhere near where the big football programs are, and I think our, the kind of enjoyment that we get from athletics is nicely calibrated with our budget. So athletics is an area where I don't think there's any question that it's out of control. I think the university presidents that I talk to are all aggravated by it, not only by that, but by, you know, our relationships with the NCAA. Which needs a lot of reform and is something that gets talked about. So I think in that area, absolutely. In some of the other areas, I have to question your premise. For example, facilities. It costs a lot of money to do science. If we want the kind of breakthroughs that we are working on in Farmington, at Storrs, to cure cancer, to solve energy problems, to work on sustainability, you do need very high-powered, sophisticated equipment and facilities. For example, one of the things we're working on right now at UConn, because we really do have to get into specifics, otherwise your question, it's not productive. You know, the discussion's not productive. To do brain science these days, you need to put your subjects, your patients under fMRI, under functional MRI. to see what's going on in their brain and to do proper research. And it's the future. And as you know, with the aging population, we're seeing more and more deterioration, Alzheimer's, you know, different kinds of mental illness, you know, with our baby boomers, you know, starting to age out. So it's the key to solving a lot of mental illness. We do not have a dedicated MRI on the Storrs campus. So our scientists who work on the brain have to go rent time at Yale, at Brown, other magnets around the state. It's very inefficient. They can't get the time they need. We need that magnet on campus. So we're working on it right now. Costs millions of dollars. It takes a staff to run it. The building that it's in cannot shake. It has to be very, very still for this extremely expensive equipment. So that's just one example of a piece of scientific equipment that is vital to solving, you know, major health problems. We don't have it. If we're going to contribute that, and we do have great brain scientists here, we need that equipment. So you can say, oh, that's very expensive. You shouldn't be spending on it. I think we should.
Well, okay, so you're saying my question is too broad. The reason I don't think it's too broad is I've talked to people at schools all around the country, and I'm not talking about brain science here. Mm-hmm. If we're going to spend millions of dollars on brain science equipment, we got to spend millions of dollars on brain science equipment. What I'm talking about is the need for schools to upgrade their campus mm-hmm. in order to appeal to undergrads.
Right.
That every single campus a young person goes to is now trying to make it so that the athletics facilities or whatever is going to be more attractive to that person. Maybe you can talk about
sure.
that a little bit, because right now there is a project on the books, right? This is a $100 million
No, not yet on the books. Yeah, let's talk about that in a second. But
sure.
Yeah, okay, so I think you understand now that most of the big money here is going into scientific
sure, sure,
facilities,
sure.
most of Next Gen Connecticut. Okay, I just want to underscore that. Now, on the student life side, absolutely. I mean, there's no question that students and you know, they can react to this when you get to your Q&A. They have greater demands for what their lifestyle's like. I mean, I think that, you know, most students are used to wireless internet around their house, and they get to campus and they expect it here. So IT is a big part of that expenditure that you're talking about. Students now, and this is a very positive development, even though it costs us money, they want to work out. They want to work out day and night. They're very healthy. They're health conscious. They want dining halls that have a lot of choices of healthy food. All this stuff costs money, and it costs to retool. You could argue, and this is a kind of generational debate, do they really need it? Is it too luxurious? I don't know. I'm not a sociologist, so, you know, maybe youth culture is going the wrong direction. There's no question that when I went to college, you know, we lived, it was more barrack-like, and we didn't have any choices in the dining hall and so forth.
Trust me, I don't want them to eat like I ate.
So it's the kind of, you know, it's, you know, call it bourgeois, call it whatever you want, but it's a changing nature in the demands that students have of the universities. We don't do everything they want, and I'm sure the students here would be glad to tell you there are many, many things that they would like to have that we just will not supply. But we do feel like, you know, they need to be comfortable here. They need to be happy that their health, their welfare, their happiness is integrated with how well they learn.
We're talking with Susan Herbst, the president of the University of Connecticut. She has been good enough to join us here on the Storrs campus at the Student Union. In just a moment, we're going to take a break, and we'll get to some student questions. There's a few more things we want to get through with her as well. And if you want to join us, if you're in the Storrs area, if you're on campus, you'll listen to our 99.5 signal. You can come on over to the Student Union and take part in today's conversation. When you talk to students about this, how closely do they align the high cost of their education with all the things you're talking about? I mean, do you ever get complaints mm-hmm. from students? Do you get people talking about this, about the fact, I can't afford these loans I'm taking on, and then, you know, the school spends a lot of money on Project X, and maybe mm-hmm. it doesn't benefit me. Do you have those conversations with students a lot?
Yeah, I mean, there are different kinds of money is the issue. So, you know, the capital projects are one thing, and they're unconnected to our operating budget, which affects tuition. One thing we've worked on, at least since I've been here, is financial aid. And the amount of financial aid that we give out at UConn is skyrocketed, and that's appropriate. Our tuition goes up, and this is true for most of the public universities, because of cuts in the state appropriations. And it's part of the shared sacrifice. I mean, we would not like, I mean, I would like tuition to be zero. And I think that's true for most presidents. But the truth is we have to pay for the faculty and the staff that we have here. Most of the university budget is in people. I mean, that's what a university runs on. And that's the operating budget. That's the thing to worry about, not the capital projects. So there's because they're funded differently and bonded. So There are two different types of expenditure. One of the things that a lot of people don't understand, and students are always really interested in this when we talk about it, is what they pay in tuition. And by the way, our tuition is a great value, and we've been cited for that. Senator Blumenthal was here congratulating us on that the other day, and we've been in Kiplinger's and other publications for that. The cost of college, the tuition that students pay, does not even come close to what it costs us to educate a student. So there's a huge gap between those two things. It's something most people don't understand. You know, it gets very technical, but that's no excuse for tuition going up. I mean, the reason tuition goes up is because state appropriations go down. And, you know, President Obama has noted that. It's well known. What we have to do, because we still have to run the place and pay good professors and get great staff here, run our fabulous police force, is we have to make sure that the neediest students, or who students who find themselves all of a sudden in some trouble financially, that they can turn to our financial aid office and get help. We have our financial aid director here. She's happy to get more specific, but it's something we're really proud of.
Well, we just had Senator Blumenthal on, and we were talking about a plan that the president has put forward, because Senator Blumenthal is trying to get down the cost of a college education, trying to make it so that these loans that students take out aren't crippling
right.
them for well into their careers. One of the things that the president wants to do is essentially tie a school's performance and have a rating system that would say, this is a school that's a good value for you. And so if you go into a school like this, that's the sort of school that you can get a better rate at or better loan for.
Yeah.
You think it's a good idea?
A great idea. And maybe it's a great idea because UConn is a terrific value, and we've got a lot to be proud of. So that kind of talk, it may scare some institutions, but I think institutions that are well run, that have a lot of financial aid, that are a great value, they've been trying to keep tuition down and still boost quality. We're ready for it, so we welcome it.
Susan Herbst is here. She's the president of UConn, and we're going to take some questions from students when we come back from this break here live on the UConn campus at the Student Union. This is Where We Live. Live from the University of Connecticut, this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're sitting down with Susan Herbst, the president of UConn. She joins us periodically in the program, but she was good enough to invite us out to campus. And it's a beautiful facility, by the way. I haven't been in the Student Union in quite some time. And it's a great older building with a newer building around it. It's a great place.
Yeah, they did a great job with the renovation here. So it keeps a kind of Art Deco feeling, but it's very modern. And students really love it. It's not big enough. We got, you know, you should see this place at night. It's really, it's hopping.
we were talking a little bit about building, so let's talk about some other things. The rec center project that we were talking about, you were making the case for it, but we didn't really talk about where it was
sure.
right now. What is happening? This, again, I mentioned some people may have read, it's a $100 million facility, at least on paper. Where does it stand as far as that getting built?
Well, there's no it yet. And $100 million, not exactly. You know, there are various sizes of rec center you can build at different costs. So when I first came here, the thing I got pounded on, you know, by students immediately was no proper rec facility. And those of you who are familiar with UConn know that we're still using the field house. It's a very small, poor facility. The students are generally very unhappy with it. It's crowded, big waits for machines. And it doesn't look anything like the rec centers that you see at modern research universities these days, at big places. And, you know, I've been around the country, worked at many places, and, you know, there's no question ours is, it's not just, you know, less than adequate. I mean, it's really a poor facility. You know, probably hurts us on recruiting. Like I said before, a lot of students are very interested in working out and in nutrition and in, you know, classes and fitness. So, you know, it probably hurts us some on that. But I have to tell you that it's a lifestyle issue that a lot of students, and I would say hundreds of students, have complained to me about, you know, since I've been here. So we started talking about it. It's something the university has put off for a very long time. It's something that I do not think we should go to the legislature for or the governor. I think it's about the health and fitness of our students, but it's not an academic building. We do not have donors typically don't want to give to a rec center, or not at the levels that we'd need to build it you know, in my lifetime. So philanthropy is not going to work given all the needs we have for scholarships and endowed professorships and so forth. So those two are out. I mean, we can't ask the legislature for this. I would never do such a thing. We can't raise the money fast enough given our other philanthropy commitments. So the question is, how badly did the students want this? Because it's going to take a student fee. And we've been through different scenarios about what the fee might be. No one would pay the fee until the doors were open on this building. And that's the debate going on right now. The
like
Board of
$400
Trustees.
$400 or $500 a student?
Yeah, very likely. So it's going to be up to the students. We have our student government working on it. We have our student trustees working on it to try to suss out public opinion. Right now it looks overwhelming to me that the students would like to pay the fee and have the facility. But we'll see. And the board has not voted on this yet. It's one of those things where, you know, do you want this service? There's no free lunch here as much as we've tried.
You know, one of the things that you obviously did go to the legislature for, this new building project, you mentioned this, the Next Generation Connecticut. You mentioned some of the building around sciences. And I'd like to talk a bit more about that. But one thing that has been, I believe, resolved since the last time we talked was there was quite some controversy over how we were going to get water to the campus. Because there was a brand new need for a lot more water. One plan had water being piped from the Farmington Valley from an MDC facility. The folks at the MDC really liked that idea, selling you water. A lot of folks in the Farmington River Valley thought that was a lousy idea.
That's right.
So you've arrived at a plan. How are you going to get water to this campus? I'll ask you a two-part question. How are you going to get water to this campus, and why you need so much damn water?
Because we have a lot of people here, tens of thousands of people, and we're a small town. Actually, not such a small town.
Getting bigger all the time.
We're big. We have a lot of people living here, and any town takes water. We have our own emergency responders. We have our own police force. We have our fire force. You know, so and so of course we need water like any town or university. So we looked at different options, as you noted. You know, some were very unpopular with the public, but mostly we were focused on, you know, how to get water here in the most efficient, you know, productive way we possibly could. And we went through a lot of study over many years, and we settled on Connecticut Water. It's only a few miles away. Project should be very cost effective. It'll give us all the water we need for decades to come. I think that we should be part of a state planning process over water that's come up. I hope that's something we can help lead. But we're actually using less water now than we were a few years ago because of our water reclamation efforts. And so much of the stuff is on the web. I encourage you to come read about it. But our water reclamation facility, which we opened a couple of months ago, is one of the I think it's the largest in the state of Connecticut. You know, the Commissioner Dan Esty was here to celebrate it. So, you know, of course we need more water as the campus expands, but we also need to reclaim water. So, as you know, the Sierra Club voted us number one most environmentally sustainable, coolest campuses in the country. And a big part of that was about conservation of water. So, you know, I'm sorry some of the media coverage was inaccurate, hyperbolic, but I promise you we've done the most responsible, cost-effective thing, and we're very, very focused on being good stewards of the environment.
So you're not worried about the resources in this area, the Connecticut water resources actually being able to sustain this? I mean, in the past, in this area, there have rivers have dried up. The Fenton River dried up. A bunch of fish flopping around in the summertime.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean,
very bad.
How do we keep that from happening again? And how do we get UConn moving us toward that whole state water plan? You said it before. The governor said it. We need some sort of a plan. Why couldn't UConn's need for more water be tied into just redoing this whole thing and getting a new water plan for the state?
Yeah, I think a water plan for the state, and, you know, I'm out of my depth here. I don't really know much about the entire – all I know is what we face in this area. And I can tell you that the Fenton River will not dry up again. We are – you know, and I can't apologize for the past. I mean, that was bad. You know, there's no two ways about it. But now I think we're being very responsible. Connecticut Water, terrific to work with. We have some permitting work and regulatory work to do, but it's going fine. Service for decades to come. On the state water plan, that's going to take a while. That's going to have a lot. You saw how many voices were interested in just UConn's water.
Yep.
So I think that'll take some years to do. I think that, you know, with good leadership, it'll be done well. But, yeah, we can't wait. No town, no university can wait for a larger project like that. All I can say is that we are being very responsible with regard to the environment and cost.
We're talking with Susan Herbst, and we're going to get some questions from some students here. And please weigh in if you'd like to ask any questions of the president of the University of Connecticut. Just raise your hand. We'll get you a microphone. Another place where you're building is this plan to move the campus that's in West Hartford into downtown Hartford. And we've talked about this a couple times. And I think from our conversations in the past, UConn is very interested in being part of making sure that downtown Hartford is vital and interesting and has a lot going on. But in this plan, there's been a little bit of back and forth with the city. There are a number of different proposals that were on the table, places where you could build, some which the city preferred because ain't nobody going to build there. I mean, there's places that no one has built for years. And there's other places that now are starting to look like they might come alive on their own, like the spot, the old Hartford Times building, that you've decided to choose for this campus. I guess I'll ask you first, Susan Herbst, why this particular location for the UConn campus?
Well, it's a beautiful building. It's an iconic building. Obviously, it's not big enough for the campus that we're going to move there, so we have architects who have, you know, worked on this and thought about, you know, how to expand it, you know, into the back. And you know how much room there is back there, vacant lot. So it's an iconic building. It is exactly where we want to be in Hartford. This, you know, it's very hard to get our messaging out on something that is of interest to so many people, and it has a lot of emotion attached to it, but very important for us to be near the Wadsworth. The Wadsworth is a world-class art institution. The humanities are central to what we do here. There is not enough traffic going through the Wadsworth, in part because, you know, Hartford is that part of Hartford has lost population, and the whole city has. So that proximity vital to us. Wonderful to be near the Hartford Public Library. We have great colleagues there. We have all kinds of ideas for programming, and that's something that's very exciting to us. We want to be in an entertainment district. I think those of you who have been to great city campuses, like NYU, for example, just to take one that's, you know, it's really in quite exciting part of a city, you want to be near theater, you know, movies, drama. You want to be near restaurants. You want to be near taverns. I mean, that's what being a city university is all about. I was at Temple University for a while as a dean, right smack in North Philadelphia. Also, you know, more, you know, it's near entertainment, it's near restaurants. I mean, over time, gotten to be more and more of an exciting, sought-after campus because it has that vibrancy. So we want to go where the action is. There's no secret about that. But it doesn't mean that we don't care about other parts of the city. Well, and it's the beginning.
But I think you mentioned Temple, and I mean, we could probably name off city campuses. Some places, look, NYU, it's in Manhattan. At the end of the day, you're going to have stuff around you. But there are many campuses, like the one in North Philadelphia, where the school comes first, and then things get built up around it. Not to speak for the city necessarily, but we have our building there, and I want Hartford to succeed as much as anyone. That area where you're looking to build is now finally starting to be a retail destination. That was just vacant land forever. And now, you know, we've got Infinity Hall coming in. There's a movie theater. Mm-hmm. There's some restaurants. And I think the city may be looking at it like we can commercially develop that area, but there's other areas where if UConn could be a pioneer, if you could get out in front and build us this downtown campus in a plot of land that people haven't built on in the past, people will start to build around there. There will be business around there. UConn can lead Hartford out of something.
Maybe. I mean, that's not the kind of risk that I take as university president. I don't put our students, 18, 19, 22-year-olds, we're not going to build a frontier. We're going to go to a area that is safe for our faculty and students, that is exciting to them. You know, universities, this is you know, has some risk to it. And we want to reduce that as much as possible. So all that said, and, you know, I've talked to the mayor and others about this, and we were on the same page now. And we did have a disagreement about it, but I think that we've come to some real consensus about it, and we'll work together. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it would be great to put all kinds of things on the frontier, but that's not something I'm willing to do with UConn, and neither is the board.
Yeah, I know, and I completely understand, but you understand from the city's point of view.
Absolutely.
That idea that if the big state university could come in and help us in this way, all of a sudden it makes Hartford it takes Hartford up a notch. It helps Hartford
maybe,
get to the
next
level.
Maybe, John. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, there's a lot of steps there.
But we take a lot of risks,
John. Look, I see their point of view. Yeah. It's not something we agree with. And, you know, there are many cities in the state of Connecticut that would like us to build there. And we want to be in Hartford. That's where we want to put it. And this is the location we want. We've been through every aspect of it. We have debated it. It's where we want to go. You want us on the frontier? That's not where we want to be. We want to be on Front Street.
I think some people have said that to you. But
look, on a different note, this is the beginning of us in Hartford.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any – if we are very successful at the site we're going to, I don't see any reason why we can't look at other sites to expand in Hartford. So, you know, you're making it sound like either or. I see this as the first step in something that is overdue by decades of UConn being part of Hartford. So who knows? We may be on that frontier, and it may not be very long. But, you know, let's get a start here in a building that has a proximity we think is good. It's not risky for us. And then we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we can agree on that. It's definitely overdue. And I'm glad that it's happening. Susan Herbst joins us here on Where We Live. We're live at UConn's Student Union. And we've got some students in the audience. Hi there. What's your name?
My name's Jesse Rifkin.
Hi there. So what's your question?
Hi. I'm a journalism major and a senior. Earlier this summer, the UConn women's basketball team went to the White House to be honored for their national championship. And during their group picture with the president, yes, I think you know where I'm going with this, two of the players held up bunny ears with their fingers behind the president. The pictures went super viral online, got millions of views, with the opinion seemingly split down the middle. Half the people thought it was rude and disrespectful. Other half thought it was lighthearted, fun, and harmless. Where do you come down on the bunny ears?
Sure. Well, I was off to the side, so I missed the whole thing, except for seeing it on the media later. Let me first start by saying these are amazing women. They are respectful. They are leaders. They are great students. They're just wonderful to be with, like so many of other students. But we're so incredibly proud, and they're winners. And, you know, there's all this talk about women should lean in. You know, these are the women leaders of the future. Could not be more proud of them. All right, the real story is that Obama turned to them and said, "Now, don't put bunny ears on me or anything like that." And then there's pictures taken. And then he said, "Now you can do bunny ears." It went something like that. And so then they did. So that's the real story. Our students did not mean any disrespect. The president thought it was fun. They thought it was fun. There you have it.
I'll ask you a quick follow-up question. Is that perhaps the most ridiculous controversy that anyone's ever written about?
No, actually, we have crazier stuff than that written about us. And, you know, I wish I could be, sometimes students, don't like what they see on the internet about UConn. And you know, I wish I were president of the internet.
But it doesn't work that way. If you've got more questions here. Oh, hi, what's your name?
My name's Thomas. I'm a senior and a political science student, and actually transferred to UConn last year for a lot of the reasons that you talked about. So I just wanted to thank you for a lot of the programs that you've been getting into. My question is actually about NextGen CT. I'm a political science student. I'm considering going into urban planning. And when I was looking at the NextGen CT line items, it's including $93 million for parking. And I just wanted to ask, I actually mentioned this to you on Where We Live about a year ago, about connecting UConn to Hartford with Connecticut Transit. And I know there's a lot of students here who are very interested in being able to get off of campus without owning a car. And if we're going to be spending $93 million on parking as part of NextGen CT, maybe using part of that to, you know, better connect stores to Hartford and New Haven and New York and Boston, which are all very close compared to a lot of the competitive universities you've been talking about.
Yeah, I think that's a great question.
That's a Where We Live question. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate that.
Thanks, political science major. That's my major. Great question. So parking, people are going to have cars. I mean, we just got it. You're expanding the campus, you have parking. And remember, too, it's a student parking, but it's also faculty and staff. So they need to park here, and it needs to be safe, convenient. That aside, I think we have major public transportation issues, getting out to stores especially. You know, we've got some private carriers who are, you know, Megabus and that sort of thing, and they help. But he's making the money sign to me, too, that, yeah, those can be expensive. We've started to run a shuttle between the health center in Farmington, a free shuttle, and the store's campus. That's been helpful to our students and our scientists. But we need to work on this. It's connected to so many other problems, too, putting aside student life. For example, there are so many terrific people in the city city of Hartford in New Haven who would like to work at UConn. Mm-hmm. And I don't think our staff is diverse enough here, for example. And part of the reason is that, you know, stores is not convenient to get to unless you have a car. So that lack of public transportation, it's important on so many dimensions. It's something that that we have to work on. I think we can put some of the money from NextGen into that. Remember, a lot of the NextGen money is capital money, so it's one-time expenditure, not operating. But, you know, I think we can make a dent in it.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, follow up. The one thing, when you were talking about students, I know that I actually considered moving to downtown Hartford myself and commuting here. And when I realized actually the cost of Peter Pan and the infrequency of it, that was, so I think that, you know, with the West Hartford campus moving to downtown, you know, that really gives an opportunity to have synergy between the two campuses as well as the city. And that's really something that, you know, we should prioritize going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, just to take your major, the one of the departments, excellent department here that is moving to downtown Hartford from West Hartford is the public policy department. So if you'd want to get that degree, you know, you could live in Hartford, take classes there. But no, you're absolutely right on that. I think it's something that we have, you know, basically ignored for decades.
Well, and he's, you know, he's talking from an urban planning mm-hmm. perspective, and one of the ways that question is phrased and where it comes from, and it comes up on our show a lot, is, yeah, people are going to have cars, so we're going to have places for them to park. But as long as we keep, and this gets back again to this theme that we have today, which is, I think, a good theme, about leadership of UConn in the state. When we in the media ask about how much we're all spending on UConn, one of the things I think we want from UConn is to just take off and lead in some really great directions. And we've talked about it. Bioscience, you got it, and that's happening. But things like the way we plan our city, our water resources, our public transportation. When we spend $93 million in a parking lot, we're not spending $93 million on a way to get people from downtown Hartford to stores in a more efficient way. And so I guess I'm wondering how we can do that, how we can take some of that money and actually invest it in a way that's going to be the next generation, not just more people in cars driving out here.
Yeah, no, we can do that. We will do that. It takes investment to lead. I mean, that's the piece you're missing. And NextGen, Bioscience Connecticut, those are the investments that this governor and a very sophisticated legislature have made in us so that we can lead. You need people to lead. I mean, the greatest resource of the university is not the parking lot or anything like that. It is the people that we bring here. We have terrific scientists who know a lot about water, a lot about water reclamation and planning. We need to support them in their work. I mean, we have to support their research. We have to give them research assistance. We have to enable them to analyze data to lead. So investment will lead to leadership. I think you're seeing it right now, and we're grateful for it. So absolutely, I agree with you. We don't disagree.
Aside from the bunny ears, we haven't really talked much about sports. We'll come back from our break, and we will talk about sports with Susan Herbst. We'll also talk about some other issues, and we'll get some more questions from our students who are here at the Student Union on the campus of the University of Connecticut, now known as UConn, in Storrs, Connecticut. This is where we live. Live from the University of Connecticut in Storrs, this is where we live. I'm John Dankosky, and we're talking with Susan Herbst, the president of the university today. We're taking some questions from students and others who are joined here at the Student Union with us, and we've got a lot more to cover. We'll be talking about sports in just a moment, but one thing that has happened since the last time we got a chance to talk that got a little bit of press and now has, I guess, gone away, and I was looking for an update from you. The school is cooperating in multiple investigations into some misdeeds by Robert Miller, who's the former head of the music department, things having to do with sexual misconduct of various sorts. First of all, can you tell me where that investigation is right now, as far as you know?
Yeah, I can't say much about it, but there's a criminal investigation going on and also an administrative investigation going on, so related to Title IX. So two investigations going on in parallel, and like I said, confidential, not something I'm doing, so done by police, and the Attorney General's office is hiring a law firm, independent law firm, to, you know, do a look back on how the university handled allegations, and that's what they are now, are allegations. So, you know, I think we're handling this very well. We're very careful. I think that universities have gotten better at this. I think, like most of America, have become more enlightened about accusations and how things have to be followed up. So, I think we're about as transparent as we can be about this. We have a website that kind of lays out the timeline of what we think happened, what we know happened. So I encourage people to look at that.
He's not been charged with a crime, though. So,
yeah, as of now.
Right. As of now. So I guess I've just been trying to understand, why do we know as much about him as we do and about the fact that there may be these allegations or accusations when he's not been charged with a crime?
All we did as a university was report on what we know.
Yeah.
And what we've done, and in addition to the police investigation that we have internally and the ones that are external, we have asked the Attorney General for help in doing the look back. So we're trying to be as open as we can about it and tell you what we can about it. I think there are a lot of unanswered questions, and I think that over the coming year or two, I'm not sure how long this is going to take, we'll know more. But as of this point, that's right, no.
And it's prompted some new looks at relationships between students and faculty. Are there new rules on the books as of this year?
Yeah, actually, that conversation started before this case came to light, at least to me, to my administration. So that had been going on for, I think, at least 6 months, maybe a year, to pass a new policy like that on student-faculty-staff romance. You do have to get a lot of feedback. We got feedback from faculty, from students, from our unions. And so that had been in progress already, so it's kind of coincidental. I have to say, for me, I feel very strongly that when there's this kind of power differential between a student and either faculty member or staff, that should be disallowed because I think that it can lead to problems. Most universities I've seen, I have done this very systematically, but looking at our great research universities that we compare ourselves to, they mostly have a "you shouldn't," not a the step we took, which is that "you cannot," that it's actually disallowed. So we did. We fell on the stronger side of this continuum, but I feel good about it.
So let's talk a little bit about sports on campus because it's so much a part of UConn life. Division I schools often schedule the first football game of the season against a team from a lower division because they want to get off to a good start and beat the crap out of them. And it seems as though the University of Connecticut attempted to do this with a school from Maryland, Towson State, and it didn't work out so well. What does that loss say about the UConn football program right now? What does it say about the future of the football coach, Paul Pasqualoni?
Well, first of all, in defense of Towson, they're a very good program, and they had a very good close game against LSU last year, and you can't, that's pretty big-time football. So, okay, item one.
That hasn't been said.
Bracketing that is very disappointing. I mean, there's no question about it. I'm disappointed. The fans are disappointed. Paul is. Ward Manuel, our athletic director. We want to win. We've invested a lot in football. The state has invested a lot in football. We want to be good at it. So, we'll see how the rest of the year goes. There are a lot of games ahead. I mean, one of the hard things emotionally about football is, every game is a high-stakes game. Basketball, there's, 30-some-odd games. It's easy to have one bad loss, and you can look forward to something a few days later. Baseball, soccer, a lot of sports are like that. And football is, every game, has so much riding on it. And so we hope things will go better. I hired Ward Manuel, our athletic director, for so many reasons. He's a very talented person, but he is a football guy. He played football at Michigan. He worked at Michigan in the department. He knows a lot about this. So I think at least while this is disappointing, while we're all impatient, I think you can be assured that you have somebody who has tremendous expertise as a player in this and as an administrator looking at this program and trying to help. So we'll see.
And I want to get to another quick student question here, but I just have to say, as we've talked about before, football drives college athletics.
Yes.
If you're going to get into the football business, you almost have to do well in it. And is there a timeline in your mind for this program to get to the point at which it is actually competitive? Maybe it's able to take you mm-hmm. to a bigger and better conference or what? I mean, what's your timeline on this?
Sure. Yeah, there's no question football is a driver of college athletics. And I have to say that I think almost all the presidents, with the exception of just a few old-timers, have been surprised during the conference realignment about just how singularly important football is, especially, you know, kind of a jolt at UConn, where we're so good in so many Olympic sports, soccer, basketball, baseball, so forth. So in terms of football, we have come so far, and this is something that a lot of our fans and people who have hung with us a long time who are true supporters see that we only went Division I big-time football so just over a decade. I mean, it's tremendous progress. We went to bowl games, and we have so much momentum. And I think that's why this season is so pivotal and why the first loss is so disappointing, is because we came so far so fast, bowl games, so far. So, you know, we're not Alabama. We're not Michigan, although we play Michigan in a few weeks. Stay tuned. We're playing excellent teams. Look at last year. We beat Louisville. It's ranked number 18 this year. So we're in the football big time. We're not at the top. We know that. We've got a lot of work to do, but look how far we've come. I mean, those older alums know when we used to play on Memorial Field here, and look at us now.
Let's get another question. Hi there. What's your name?
Hi, my name is Katie Parmalee. I am a senior journalism major, getting off football for a second.
Please.
Thank you.
I've been hearing for years now about a housing crisis at UConn because the university doesn't have enough housing for the number of students it enrolls. What steps are you taking to address this problem?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I wouldn't call it a crisis because I think we've housed the students that need to be housed, and so crisis might be a little bit strong. That said, we absolutely have a housing shortage, and I don't know if some of you are in rooms that were meant for two people, and now there are three people in them. So we're doing a lot of planning around this, and it's one of the many reasons that I hired our first chief architect, a master planner, who we took from Yale. Thank you, Yale. And she's working on dorms in particular. In the next couple of years, we hope to construct a new dorm, thanks to NextGen Connecticut, probably 800 students, maybe up to 1,200. So we need to do that before we expand the student body in any dramatic way. So the steps are laid out in the plan, but housing has got to be number one. Students want to live on campus or proximate to campus. I don't know if you know this, John, but UConn is the most densely residential campus in the country. We have over 12,000 students who live on or right next to campus. So I'm comparing even to the huge universities out in the Midwest and the South. There's a lot of attractions, obviously, to being on campus or near campus, and we have to make it happen. So I'll tell you, it's one of the highest priorities we have, and it's a great question.
We have time for one more very quick question. Go ahead.
Right, my name is Tyler Krauss. I'm a senior journalism major as well. And going back to athletics, a couple months ago, obviously, as we all know, the logo has changed. And there was some backlash, was some opposition. And now that students have had the summer and people have had a chance to kind of get used to the logo, have you seen any opinions change overall as a president? Have you seen any differences in how people feel about the logo?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to tell you that the people who are negative get the most attention, and thank you for showing that. And no university has ever changed its mascot or its logo without people objecting, because it's hard to change, and we get comfortable with things. But we did do a lot of vetting of it. Got a lot of positive feedback when the logo New Husky first came out. So I think the reception was good to start with, but absolutely it's gotten better. And I think probably the best indicator of this is how many students I see on campus with the new Husky on. And I think there's a lot of pride in it. I think it's a great looking design. Change is hard, but we've talked about this before. The old mascot just needed an update.
And very quickly, just a couple of seconds, though, but it's UConn now. How do you feel about that? You like the fact that it's UConn, it's not the University of Connecticut?
Yeah, I love it. And many great universities have shortened names, Penn, UCLA, MIT, you can go on and on. We're not always UConn. Formal applications for my business, we are the University of Connecticut as well. And so I think you'll see both of them, but we're proud to be UConn. It's what people around the nation call us. We've done a lot of work on this. I think it's terrific. Susan but if people want to call us the University of Connecticut, you go ahead.
Susan Herbst is the president of the University of Connecticut, sometimes known as UConn. Thank you very much for having us out here today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, John. It's a pleasure.
And thanks for all the students who came out and all the great questions here on Where We Live. We'll be back on Monday. I'm John Dankosky, and this is Where We Live.